Welcome to No Filter Sports. It is Monday, October 7th, after a big sports weekend. Eli Zarrett, Danny McClain, Bob Page. What we got coming up today, we're going to talk to a Wolverine great about Saturday's game and where Michigan stands. Harlan Huckleby, star running back in the 70s, went on to play in the pros 6 years. Cass Tech graduate was at the game with him on Saturday, and I'm anxious to hear what he has to say about where Michigan is or isn't, I guess, at this point. Wings are off to a great start. Going to get into that a little bit. Anthony Mantha is red hot. Talk a lot of football. Also, give you our phone number, 760-89-BALLS, 760-89-BALLS, or asknofilter at gmail.com. And again, you can write to us with comments or questions. You can also tweet us. And also, if you want to sponsor the show, let us know. We'd love to have you in. So Bob Page in New York and Denny McClain across from me. And I did go to the Michigan game on Saturday. Were both you guys able to catch any of that, Bob?
Oh, are you out of your mind? I never miss a Michigan game.
I know.
I never miss a Michigan State game. The question I have for you, Mr. Z, is whether you were able to catch any of that game, because my peeps tell me that you were at Drew Lane's cocktail party tailgate before the game started. How many drinks did you have before you staggered into the stadium?
One beer. I was ready. I was ready to play. I was ready to watch, ready to observe, and ready to sit on my hands with everybody else. Is one of the most boring games in Michigan football.
I totally disagree with that. Did you have any other substances besides alcohol before you went in?
Well, that's
what the hell is this?
I don't know what he's getting into. No. The defense.
He's asking me if I saw the Michigan game.
I know.
Ridiculous.
Obviously,
of course you did. I saw it.
I don't know whether you get the Big Ten Network there in New York
but people were saying after that game that this was old time football. This is old-time football.
No, please,
this wasn't old-time football.
If you like great defensive football, you love that game, and I love that game.
Well, there was great defensive football, and Michigan did, on one side of the ball, which is defensive, getting pushed around miserably by Wisconsin, did play exceptionally well, and that won the game for them. But I'll remind you of this, okay, Bob? Here's what Michigan football is to me right now, was the last series. 2 minutes and 43 seconds to go. A 10-3 lead. What do? The most conservative BS I can imagine. Jim Harbaugh looks scared.
Scared to death.
His offense is inert. It's unexciting, unsurprising, undeceptive. And Shea Patterson carries twice. Another plunge into the line. Three plays, 8 yards, punted away so the defense could win the game for them. This Michigan offense is ridiculous. And that's why I want to talk to Harlan Huckleby about it, because he played on some Michigan teams.
Wait. Listen, one thing. You know, you mentioned old defense. If they wanted old defense, they'd have rules that shaped it into old defense. It's like baseball. They didn't want any more 1-0 games, so now it's 12-11, 13-12 all the time. If the NCAA wanted it what you suggested, they would have done that a long time ago.
What do you mean?
They want, just like everything else, the NCAA wants 47-46 games. That's what they want. Those are the scores that they want. They don't want a 10-3 game. They don't want a 7-3 game. And I love the games. I mean, they're intense and what have you. But they're a little boring.
Everybody loves scoring. I've never heard the NCAA legislating against scoring. The game is what it is, and there are plenty of games like that where there's not a lot of scoring. I thought this was terrific. And Eli, you talk about the Michigan offense. I learned from reading Harbaugh's quotes afterwards that the offense is hitting its stride. Can you imagine him saying that after that feeble performance?
You know,
and I think Shea Patterson is overrated.
In the third period.
It's looking that way.
In the third period, still 10-3, because all the scoring was done early in the game. Then it was just this defensive struggle or offensive ineptitude, whichever you want to call it, okay? In Michigan's part, I'm calling it offensive ineptitude. So in the third quarter, they play the big Bose thing, the team. And you know what was over? And you know what the stadium did? Little like golf applause, because there's nothing, there's no emotion. We can tell Michigan fans aren't, they may be a cult, as Drew Lane says, but they're not stupid. This offense is going nowhere. It's not getting any better. And it's really a shame, because they got some very good players and no scheme, no deception, no nothing, no creativity, totally predictable. It's like the opposition knows every play they're going to run. I'm telling you what it was like in the stands. Disillusionment, disappointment, resignation, confusion, and in some cases, anger. I'm not angry.
Are you out of your mind? How about a win? How about a critical win against a really tough Iowa team. You predicted would beat Michigan, and Denny did too. And I predicted Michigan would be 5-1 going into Happy Valley. All they got to do is win at Illinois this coming
Saturday.
That will
not be a problem.
Be five,
well, you know, there is one thing.
So spoiled.
Bob, one thing. Let's give the defense of Michigan some credit too, though.
They took
the ball away four times.
Yeah.
Iowa came into that game only giving it away one time all season so far. So the defense stepped up and they did their thing.
Right,
but man, if you want to sit there and watch a 10-3 game every week, I'm sorry. We got to go play marbles.
Half a team isn't enough.
Did you watch the game down in Nashville where you were signing autographs? Did you actually watch the Michigan game?
We saw a quarter of it because I was with Pete Rose all afternoon.
And I was hugely entertained.
I was more entertained than you were because I was sitting with Rose for 2.5 hours.
There's nothing wrong with a 10-3 game. A win is a win. But what you see is what it is in terms of the Michigan offense. And to me, it's clueless. I don't blame it on Shea Patterson. They have great receivers, and nobody's ever open. In fact, if you did this, if you took, what was it, how many yards did they get? 252 yards. They did have a 51-yard pass to Nico Collins. Take that away. Michigan gained 196 yards all day. You got to be better than that.
Okay, Denny's been bitching about this and about Harbaugh, and I understand in a certain sense, Denny, but during that televised game on Saturday, they had a graphic up reflecting the fact that Harbaugh has had 3 10-win seasons at Michigan so far, a big winning record, and he has resurrected the program in the wake of the disastrous years of Rich Rod and Brady. So a little perspective, please.
How many times has he beat Ohio State and MSU?
Bob, it's been 15 years. It's been 15 years of dissatisfaction for Michigan. So, yes, I hate that line. Well, they won 6.5 under them and 9 under Harbaugh. Yeah. You know that's not good enough when you're an alleged national power. Let's talk about Michigan State, okay? Because we're going to talk with Harlan Huckleby more about this a little bit later in about 15 minutes.
The less said, the better.
What about Michigan State?
That's right.
I thought they played a great first quarter, didn't you?
Yeah, there was no surprise. You know, I said here last week, guys, that Indiana exposed what it looked like another great Spartan defense, and that Ohio State would do that too for the same reason. State is not athletic enough on defense. And Ohio State basically ran roughshod over them time and time again, missed tackles. I didn't even know Kenny Wilkins was in the game part of the time because he did not do much in my eyes anyway.
I agree. And they also fumbled a few times early on when they could have taken a little bit of a lead. And maybe
it wouldn't have made any difference.
Maybe not. They became exposed after that. J.K. Dobbins, 172 yards. And I by the way, all the free agent quarterbacks are playing so well. Because free agency in college football, as we said, Justin Fields, the free agent quarterback from Georgia, is having a great season. Joe Burrow, who left Ohio State for LSU as a free agent, having a great season. And, of course, Jalen Hurts, the free agent from Alabama, is having a great season at Oklahoma.
It
is professional football. Let's get serious.
Let me ask you two guys something. Do you think it's the coaching or is it the players that makes Ohio State so good?
I think it's the coaching.
Well, this is a first-year head coach. I didn't know what to expect from this guy, but he really looks and acts the part, and they got great players. The thing that disappointed me watching that game Saturday night, among other things, besides the fact that Michigan State fumbled twice early and Lewerke blew it, choked on another wide-open touchdown pass, was the scarlet and gray were wearing all black
uniforms.
What
was that all about?
Another sellout. To raise money, especially for gangbangers. Because you know what, fellas? Doesn't matter what team it is. Anything that's predominantly black in terms of their uniforms, and it could be an NHL team very easily, they are buying that. I just, you know, and the game to me was also partially ruined. We've discussed this before with ESPN, the 600-pound gorilla who does anything it wants and thumbs its noses at us. They had that constant crawl. Did you see partial NBA exhibition scores constantly throughout the game, and partial, complete Mexican League soccer games. The crawl never stopped, and this time it was Azteca 0, and you know, you name it, Agua Prieta 0.
Bob, here's a question. Go ahead, Nick.
Bob, let me say one thing to you. If the fans and the people watching the games – had any objection to it in big numbers, it wouldn't be there. People like to see what's going on, especially the gamblers.
Hey, Bob, question for you, Bob.
I don't agree with that, Bob, Danny. ESPN does what it wants to. You want to see the game, you have no choice. Go ahead,
question. I don't even see that stuff.
I don't either. I don't notice it.
My big screen is so big that they can do anything they want with the bottom 2 inches. I don't care. I got another 70 inches to play with. Yeah, show whatever
what you
want.
Saying, but think of it this. How many times have all of us as human beings been sitting somewhere or whatever, and you get that weird feeling that somebody's looking at you? And you turn around, and sure enough, somebody's looking at you. That crawl is such a distraction.
What the hell is he talking about?
I didn't even notice it. But here.
Did you medicate this morning?
Yes, with my usual.
Okay, good.
You want to talk about,
I feel better now.
You want to talk about partial soccer scores? That's fine. I was informed that this morning.
Mexican League soccer scores.
How about this? Here's your question. At 7:16 this morning, what was the lead sports story on Good Morning America? Which I believe
women's basketball.
Yes, women's the Mystics and the Sun at an empty arena was the lead story.
Why?
Who knows? Maybe women are watching. Why did Sports Illustrated have huge article on Megan Rapinoe and her girlfriend Sue Bird? How they you know take care of the dogs and when she's on the road she does this and that. It's women's sports. Women's
and
sports.
Giving,
they're forcing them down our throats.
But there's on ESPN, instead of giving you the lineups as you would like to see, who the kids are who are playing, what their hometowns are, ESPN takes it upon itself. This is on ABC, of course.
Goodness.
ESPN produced.
Here we go again.
They take it upon themselves. The impact players for Michigan State on defense, they list it as, of course, Joe Bocci and Josiah Scott. Kenny Willekes is not an impact player. On defense, who makes this stuff up at ESPN? It's so
frustrating. Listen, if you want to get into a bitch fest about the things in sports, our pet peeves, then I'm going to change the subject and give you another one, okay?
Give us another one.
And you tell me, because you're a baseball guy.
Yeah.
Since when do they start saying, constantly, all the announcers, instead of, he hit it, they say, he didn't miss it. The guy hits a home run, he didn't miss it. Well, no kidding, he hit a home run.
You know the one that gets me?
What?
Arsenal.
I've heard
Arsenal so much. Forget Price, the way he started it. But everybody's now using.
I haven't heard
terms.
Arsenal.
Yeah,
that
I
much.
Have, and it's pathetic.
I'm picky about this. You know, I kind of studied English a little bit, and I like to use language, and I'm very much into it. And these repetitive phrases, like in baseball, it used to be speed was how.
Right.
Didn't agree. Now it's velocity. That's okay. Yeah. Used to be he's good in the open field. Now it's in space. Like
in
it's
space,
outer space.
Right. Yeah.
Home runs used to be home runs. Now they're bombs, taters, strike. It used to be a strikeout. Now it's a punch out. And so, and little ones like this, like out of nowhere, announcer will say, talk about hard throwing pitchers. And I say, we weren't talking about hard throwing pitchers. Well, why were you talking?
Let me tell you. Oh, you got me going now.
How about this one?
Did you just hit on the nail?
Instead of saying Bob's a great player, they go, here's a guy who can. This is a guy. So these things drive me crazy. Anyway,
listen,
last
night we're driving back from Nashville, and we're listening to the Washington game. Okay. And there is a guy and a girl doing the play-by-play. Jessica somebody.
Yeah, Jessica Mendoza.
Jessica Mendoza. Yeah, right. She's on every Sunday night.
And I can't remember who the guy was.
A-Rod. And,
no, it wasn't A-Rod. No, it was just one guy in
okay.
Jessica.
Okay. Maybe she's doing radio.
And she's talking about throwing the high, hard one. She is talking about why a hitter can't hit the ball away from him versus inside. And then she turns it around and says, well, let me tell you why they hit the ball so hard away from them and not so well inside. Now, look at that slider. Look at that fingered forkball. Look at that forkball. She talked about forkball for 10 minutes. And I'm thinking, do you think this woman ever – I almost said a bad word. You think this woman ever threw a forkball?
That doesn't matter.
Yes,
that doesn't,
it does.
No.
She's portraying herself as a professional.
I suppose if she's the color commentator, I suppose.
She's got to know something. And all of the things she said were ridiculous. And I don't know. And this, again, is taking the game to an area that apparently somebody said in a meeting one day with one of the networks, boy, we should add a woman to the color.
Hey, she did have a pretty good softball career.
That's right.
Yeah, that's how I was going to say that, Brandon. That's
I know
producer,
that.
Course,
I know Brandon that. But that's not the point. The point is she never played hardball a day in her life.
You're right. You're right about this. Now, Cosell used to talk about the jockocracy in sports. He hated the fact that all the ex-jocks were getting into the broadcast booth. Now we have the PC empty suit executives putting women there. I have no problem with Jessica Mendoza per se. She's pretty knowledgeable. But it's image. You're if you're Jessica Mendoza on radio or TV, you're talking to guys like Denny McClain. You're talking to guys like Sandy Koufax. You're talking to Vin Scully. I don't know. I don't think I'd want to be doing that if I were Jessica Mendoza.
She cannot tell me how to throw a curveball or a slider. I'm sorry. She can't do it. Well, and that's what she was doing last night.
She's talking to the median, to the mean.
Talking about the grip on the bat, covering the plate. I mean, I'm thinking, what? Where the hell am I?
Excuse me, but at that point, can Joe Buck say it? Has he ever played anything?
Well, he's not the analyst, though.
Yeah, but
he's
not right. Joe just says, that's a strike.
So the play-by-play guy can occasionally throw a little bit in, but, you know, like you know, or then ask a question of the analyst.
And the color guy's supposed to mix in some stories. Mix in
and listen,
some nice,
I do not mind looking at
tabled stories.
I don't mind looking at pretty women as sideline.
Oh, I don't either.
What I can't take though is, I talked to Coach Smith at the break, and he says we have to really bear down and play hard, trust each other, and play as a team. Shut up! Of course they do. That's what that sport is. The cliches. My God.
Now I got two highlights I managed to glean from all the weekend baseball playoffs. You guys were talking about hard throwing pitchers a moment ago. Well, at any rate, there's a kid named Ryan Glasnow, who's 6'8" tall, a left hander. He throws hard. Here he comes playing against Houston, pitching against Houston, and that little 5'6" MF, Jose Altuve.
Oh boy.
Facing a guy who's 6'8" and just tomahawks one out to left field for home run.
And a line drive.
Jose Altuve. Wouldn't you want to just go run and hide if you were 5'6" facing a 6'8" guy throwing 100 miles an hour? He's unbelievable.
I'm going to tell you, he's one of the better ball players in baseball today. He plays. Really? He plays hard.
So?
Yeah, listen, the kid can really make – you know what he can do? He can score a run. He's one of the few guys still playing one-run baseball. Whenever I've seen him, he's always in the middle of the action all the time. And,
Danny,
defensively, you can't argue.
And he can hit home runs too. So, you know, we're going to talk
– Hall of Fame, Denny. He's going to the Hall of Fame. Yep. Go ahead.
Well, he's not going to get to the Hall of Fame.
Look at the Astros. What Verlander and Gerrit Cole last night, by
sure,
the way, 15
absolutely.
Strikeouts, no runs. Only Bob Gibson, Clemens, and Kevin Brown have done that in a playoff game. They've got the best pitching staff and the best offense in baseball as there ever been in a sport where you really can never predict anybody's going to win anything for certainty, that the Astros are that good. We are
now, Eli, I said I had two highlights. Give me one quick second here. Because for me, the highlight of the baseball weekend came Friday night. It happened here in New York. Jorge Polanco of the Twins hit a solo home run at the top of the first inning off the Yankees. And the game proceeded until a few minutes later. The dugout camera was turned on him. He's walking toward the camera. He takes a huge swig of liquid and then spits it out right in front of us. Then he bends over with the camera still trained on him, presses his hand to his left nostril, and blows the biggest, most disgusting stream of snot out of his nose that anyone on the planet has ever seen. Costas and Smoltz, they made no comment. But I bet, folks, if you're going to be on TV, even if you're a fan of the stands, don't ever do anything that you don't want mom and dad to see.
Well, first of all, you know what? The network should have a little bit more idea of what a guy's going to do. I mean, that's not the only guy that night that blew their nose in the dugout. I guarantee you that.
They caught him.
Well,
they caught him.
That's, well, it's nice. I don't know what will they write him a ticket or give him first base? What do they do when they catch him?
All four play a baseball series.
I got one more thing in baseball.
Okay, but we're going to do more baseball. We got more football coming up. Got the whole NFL.
Harlan Huckleby.
Harlan. Right. So let's take a break here. Then we're going to talk to Harlan right on the other side of the business. Because first we want to tell you about the Aldo Eye Center and eye surgery, which is a life-changing experience. Lifestyle and convenience. Never have to worry about those contacts, how annoying they are, though I never wore them. They were too annoying for me even to try. Glasses also, and reading glasses. Get rid of them. This is safe surgery. He is the best in Michigan, most prolific in Michigan, maybe one of the best in the world. I don't know. I've only been to Michigan. But Dr. Yaldo will also beat any LASIK offer. You get a lot of noise out there from these national chains about $299 LASIK. That's not true. Then again, though, he'll match any offer you can get. If you have reading glasses and hate them, try the multifocal lens exchange. I got that. Of course, I had cataracts too, but you can get it if you're 50 plus or 45 plus. It'll change your life. Call 1-800-398-EYES. 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com. The evaluation is free. Go see him.
What was the phone number again?
1-800-398-EYES.
Make sure, because you spit all over it the first time. Okay. Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in 2019. This team of mortgage professionals provides every client with VIP service, ensuring that they feel like a name and not a number. What if I told you that you could skip a mortgage payment and lower your payment? Or if I told you that Hall Financial will not only walk you through the process of buying your home, but provide you with a top realtor in your area? Who doesn't want that type of service? Hall Financial knows how to deliver five-star service. That means your schedule, availability at night and on weekends. They're going to work for you, and you won't be charged hidden or extra fees. You know what we're getting at? When you work with Hall Financial, you get the whole package. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refinance. Or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. Equal housing lender. NMLS number 1467435. 248-308-5000.
You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Huckabee deep, light up close. Ricky Leach on a pitcher keep. Gives off to Huckabee down the 50, the 45, the 40, the 35, the 30, the 20, the 10, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Harlan Huckabee, little old Huckleberry Finn from in Detroit, went all the way from the 42-yard line into the end zone.
Oh, that's the great Bob Ufer. Harlan Huckabee, of course, a state champion in track at Cass Tech. Played thrush for 3 years at Michigan, 2,624 yards, 25 touchdowns. Played in three Rose Bowls, played with some amazing Michigan teams and some amazing Michigan players under Bo Schembechler. And Harlan, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you.
So we're at the game Saturday. This is Monday now. We're recording the show on Monday, October 7th. Here's the game for me, Harlan, and tell me if I'm wrong. Michigan gets the ball, 2:43 to go. Shea Patterson carries twice, plunge into the line, kick it away. Jim Harbaugh, to me, seemed a little bit tentative, scared. What's with the defense was great. Does the Michigan offense at this point worry you, and why do you think it's struggling so?
Yeah, the offense does worry me. I felt good about the defensive effort because that was really, you know, even though you played that highlight, but that was really the hallmark, I think, of our teams then, is that we played outstanding defense. So, yeah, I am worried offensively because seems like Shea Patterson hasn't developed or was the player they told us he would be for whatever reason. But yeah, I felt good about the defensive effort though, this past weekend.
This is Denny McClain, Harlan. How are you?
Oh, Denny, how are you?
Nice to talk to you. I have a fair question. Your impressions of the team right now, can they turn this around? I'm talking about offensively, because I agree 100% with what you just said. I've always pictured Michigan as being a defensive school.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, it seems like the thing that's missing to me is that another hallmark of the teams I played on is we had, in fact, is the reason why I went there. We had outstanding offensive linemen. Every year we'd have a couple guys all Big Ten, somebody All America, and I don't see that. I saw that in Wisconsin on that team and the way that team is built. They also have the great running back, too, but we don't seem to have that dominance we used to have up front on the offensive line. And along with the quarterback play, it just seems like the offense has been sputtering.
But the offensive linemen are all Big Ten. They're veterans. They should be stars. Doesn't it go beyond that? It seems like everybody knows what's coming when Michigan gets to the line of scrimmage. It's interesting. You're putting it on Shea Patterson. I would put it more on the scheme that they're not deceiving anybody. They're uncreative. They're predictable. And they seem to me, I hate to say it, maybe I was that good, they seem incapable.
Well, I hate to sound like I'm putting it on Shea Patterson, but he hasn't performed up to the level that we all expected. I mean, you know, we were told he was going to be really something totally different than what we had had before he showed up, and basically be able to hit open guys or find the right man to hit, and that keeps your offense rolling. But I don't think that offensive line is up to the level of what it used to be and what we used to have. Like I said, what they have at Wisconsin right now. They pushed us around when we went to Wisconsin. That's one thing I got to admit is that that team didn't look – I was not familiar with that football team that played against Wisconsin. I'd never seen Michigan get pushed around like that.
Yeah. How about the Ohio State game last year? Did you like that?
62 points.
That's right. You say you've never seen them pushed around like that?
Well, I think no, I hadn't. No, Ohio State, they ran – They threw the ball. They had their crossing patterns going. They were throwing passes on us, deep pass. No, they were beaten soundly last year. And when they got beat, I looked at that 62 points. I'd never seen that before. But Wisconsin just physically, maybe because that's the most recent one, they physically punched us in the mouth.
It seems like you can play hard on defense and get better, which obviously they did. They played harder, where they got their courage from or whether they lost it, I don't know. But on offense, you have to really know what you're doing. You have to really have a scheme. You have to really have a plan. You have to be deceptive and creative. It seems like the defense was more easy to turn around than the offense maybe. But I don't want to keep on beating on the offense. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Hey, Hawk, I just wanted to say, when you listen to the playback of this show at some point later on, you'll hear the first segment in which I say that Shea Patterson is overrated. But you'll also see my two cohorts here jump down Michigan's throat. And I'm trying to defend Harbaugh. He's had 3 10-win seasons there. I said they'd be 5-1 going into the game at Penn State. I mean, there are a hell of a lot of football programs around America who'd love to be in Michigan's position right now.
You're right about that. I can't disagree with you on that, Bob. And, 5-1 going in. I mean, they should win this week. Then we've got what? We got Notre Dame coming in.
Michigan State is also coming in. They will beat Michigan State. The Ohio State game's in Ann Arbor, too.
Yeah. Beat Michigan State. We'll see. Also, Notre Dame coming in.
We'll see.
Notre Dame played pretty tough against Georgia, really, you can say, a home game for them. So, I mean, all these games matter, and they can really, I mean, their destiny's in their hands. Well, I guess we can put it that way. Yeah, they lost to Wisconsin, had that big, they got beat really bad. But if they can win out, which I don't think they'll do, I mean, I'm looking at maybe, it's going to be on the fence. We got to go to Penn State. You got Notre Dame coming in. You got Michigan State, who has a good defense, who really shot themselves in the foot down at Ohio State. No one expected them to win, but if you take away those turnovers, I think they played okay. I mean, wouldn't you say they exceeded your expectations down at Ohio State, Michigan State?
I would say their defense was exposed, which I said at the top, because the defense, as good and tough as they are, they're not athletic enough. Indiana exposed them, and Ohio State did too.
Yeah, Indiana did. They had a good offense. They got a good quarterback, and he's a multi-talented guy that's tough to handle.
Athletic.
And you see, and Harlan, he completed 20 straight passes, the Indiana quarterback Michael Penix did against Michigan State.
Yeah.
It's the kind of deceptive, little crossing patterns, little you know, go this way, go back. I don't see the deception in Michigan's attack. It seems so predictable. This is why I don't think whether they beat Michigan State, maybe, or maybe beat Penn State. I just don't see them being good enough and having enough time this year to change it under Harbaugh. Let me ask you this. Go ahead, Denny. You have a question?
Yeah, one question. I want to talk to you about Harbaugh for just a second. I've always said Harbaugh, based upon what I've seen here the last couple of years, has been and done a better job when he was playing in the NFL and coaching in the NFL. Won the big enchilada, comes here, and I don't know if he's handling these kids well enough. Is he intimidated by the kids? I can't hardly believe that, but he looks like he's afraid to push Patterson. That's what I'm trying to get to. And I don't know anymore if it's Harbaugh or the coaching, or is it the playbook?
Wow. Afraid to push Patterson.
Yeah.
I don't think so. It just seems like,
they didn't try to get a first down at the end. That's what bothered me.
Right.
They did not try and get a first down with 2:43 to go. They just 3 and out. don't know.
Yeah, I think he was just sitting on the defense by that part of the game and pretty much ready to get out of there with that victory. That's what it looked like to me. But it has been a mystery to all of us because that's where we felt he would be an outstanding coach as far as offense or coaching quarterbacks. We figured that he'd be a quarterback whisperer, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And that has not been the case since he's been here. In fact, I would say the best quarterback we've had has been Rudock the beginning his tenure. Yeah, but Rudock played. He was a solid quarterback.
You know, Harlan, it seems...
And he came from Iowa, by the way. He only played 1 year at Michigan.
You know, these dual-threat quarterbacks, the Jalen Hurts, the Kyler Murrays, the Justin Fields, even the guys at Ohio State used to have Barrett and Haskins. We don't Michigan doesn't recruit these guys, and I just waiting to see that this exciting multiple dual threat offense, and it's just depressing to see him.
Well, you're right. We have not had one of those type of guys at the helm as far as quarterback at Michigan. So we've never seen how that would operate with Michigan football team. But like I said, we thought, I know I did, that would be an area where he would excel. And that just hasn't happened. But going back, I know you guys, I don't want to take you back, but I think that there was a valid point talking about Ohio State last year. You got to admit, you have never, 62 points.
Right.
That did it for me. 62 points from Ohio State.
Yeah.
So are you saying that Harbaugh lost you on that basis of that one game? You're not a Harbaugh guy anymore?
Well, I mean, what is it being a Harbaugh guy? I mean, what's that? What's that mean?
Right.
Well, you support him and you think he can be head coach at Michigan and be really good still.
Let me put it like this, Bob. I'm a Michigan guy.
Yeah.
Okay? The day I sat down and I saw Dennis Franklin, number 9, playing quarterback, and being a football fan, I'd never seen a black guy in charge. And when I saw Bo Schembechler talking to number 9, I was sold on Michigan. Okay? There was the Condridge Holloways. You guys remember back in those days.
Sure, yeah,
sure. But when I saw that, I was sold on Michigan. So as far as being a Harbaugh guy, you can't say that. I like Jim. His dad, love him. One of my coaches. But that's the guy is his dad, Jack. That's my man. Jim, he's just a kid when I was around there. He's been a good coach. He's done a fine job. He's kept things clean. He does great things off the field for the kids. But as far as being a great coach since he's been at Michigan, Jerry's out on that.
Hey, Huck, do you know the Shakespearean phrase, damning with faint praise? That's just what you did to Jim Harbaugh. You damned him with faint praise.
Good for
and
Huck.
I thank you for your honesty.
Thank you. Good for you.
What's the matter with that?
Let's
I damned him with faint praise. I got to remember that.
that's Shakespeare, I think.
Come on. Let's be honest. He has not set the world on fire at Michigan. What is he against top 10 teams? What's the stat? 1-9?
Yep.
Something like that. So let's just be honest.
This is no filter sports. Thank you for being honest.
Yeah,
by the
please.
Way, go ahead, Denny. One more. Then I'm going to ask about Bo. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to go there. But with Harbaugh, have you had an opportunity to sit down with him? He asked you to come into his office or had any kind of session?
Well, Harlan, he did invite a bunch of you and some former players when he first came. And you told me, and I don't think I'm speaking out of school, that you were a little taken aback by how he's always on. The intensity is always there. And Bo, although you did say Bo was the most, was more intimidating than 100,000 people in the stands, which is interesting. Bo could put his arm around you and be warm and friendly. And you could tell that he loved you, even though he was hard on you. It seems like there's some human factor that may be missing there. Am I getting too deep or not?
Well, see, that's a tough one for me because the relationship is different. Maybe with his players, Harbaugh may have that relationship I talked about with Bo. I wouldn't know that. I have not been around the program in that way. Yeah, he's a little different personality. I've heard he's kind of tough to take and be around all the time, being on all the time, but you know, he's been, you know, nice guy and fine with me. But it's hard for me to compare him to Bo Schembechler because it's different relationships that we had. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Then I'm going to ask you something else since we brought up the subject. You had the good fortune to play for three of the greatest names in the entire history of football: Bo, Bart Starr, and Forrest Gregg in Green Bay. Would you compare those three guys and their styles?
Harlan played 6 years with the Packers, by the way, if people didn't know.
Yeah, I'm laughing about it because, you know, Bo, you guys knew Bo and how he was. Intense guy. I mean, I saw him, I remember reading about after we had lost somewhere and somebody asked a question. He didn't like the question. He knocked over the clipboard or something, not the blackboard or something, walked out of the interview, you know, things like that. A little different guy. Bart Starr was a A1 human being, and not to say the other coaches weren't, but he was more of a corporate type of just a classy guy. I give you guys an example. One time I forget who we were playing, and he gives us a speech, pregame speech before the game. I mean, got us all jacked up, and then he ended the speech by saying, "Let's go out and kick their fannies."
He also said it one time, and I asked Bart about this on my TV show years ago in Detroit. Let's go out and win one today for Johnny Gray, man. It's his birthday.
Oh, remember that? Did that happen? Yeah. I think so. I think he's right. Johnny Gray, you're exactly right. So it was more of coming from Bo, where, you know, the end of that speech would have been a little bit different. it was kind of a letdown, I think, to go out and kick their fannies. Yeah. And then Forrest Gregg, to be perfectly honest, his nickname on the team was Brain Damage because we felt like this guy had took too many hits. And I remember one time we were scrimmaging with no pads. It was like, and I think the coaches were going up to him like, "Hey, should we tone it down a little bit?" He said, "No." And this is the first time I heard this term. He said, "Water seeks its own level." So the guys will either lighten up or keep hitting or do whatever, and let's just let it go.
Jeez.
So, you know,
Huck, give me a reaction to this one. This is one of the great truisms. Years ago when you played for the Packers, anytime you saw a black guy anywhere in Green Bay, you knew he played for the Packers.
Harley goes to the Great White North and has to be there 6 years, freezing his ass off with no brothers around.
you guys get people in trouble, don't you? That's what you do. No,
Harlan. I'm the good guy here.
I described it as Hamtramck with a football team. That's what it was. Hamtramck with a professional football team.
Well, we've lost two segments of our audience this morning.
Well, no, I'm not disparaging Hamtramck. No. I'm just saying the makeup of the city of Hamtramck back in the day, you know, back in the 70s, you know, early 80s. So that's how it was. And pretty much if somebody was in town visiting and he was a black guy, they pretty much thought either he was on the team, trying out for the team, or, you know, something like that, if it was a black guy in town, because that's just the makeup of the city. Yeah. Oh, great people, though. Enjoy my time there. Yeah. People very nice, and just a little city that happened to have a professional football team.
Harlan, thanks for joining us. Good stuff.
Wait a minute. Well, I got one more. Harlan, how do you feel about female basketball? I want to see if we can ruin one more area.
Because the lead story of Good Morning America today was the Mystics against the Suns. Go ahead.
Yeah. Huck, I got one quick thing to say in closing. A lot of people don't know this, but you've sold TV advertising time for Channel 50 in Detroit for a long time. Why the hell aren't you on the air doing this for a living instead? You should be great.
Yeah.
Man, what are you guys talking about? You know how tough it is getting on the air, but I'm kind of reluctant to really, I really don't want to, you know, say some of the things I really, you know, think. Because that can get you in trouble.
Yeah.
And
well,
so,
I mean, if you do it full time and I mean, you have to, I mean, you can't be on the air and be a namby-pamby anymore. So that's the decision you have to make. In fact, that's what Joe Dumars said years ago. I would never do this because, you know, I know what's expected and I don't want to hurt people, but, whatever. Hey, great having you, man. Good seeing you at the game. It was great seeing Russell Davis again, your old running mate.
That's my man.
Yeah, I hope he's okay. I know he's part of that NFL concussion thing. How are you doing? I'm sure you had some concussions in your day. Are you good?
Yeah, you know what? You guys know, I tried to run away from people, man. I didn't want to, you know, they used to talk all that stuff. Oh, you got to love the contact. I hated that. I want to run for a touchdown without being touched. That was my dream.
Well, you ran
all this tough guy stuff, forget that, man. That didn't make sense. And let me finish with this. Let me just tell you guys this.
Yeah.
I was saying this weekend, when I went to ask my mother, could I play football? She's a nurse. She said, no, baby, you don't want to play. Just run through the tape. She's talking about track. Just run through the tape. She said, they'll jump on you and they'll hit you in the head. And I thought my mother was crazy. She was dead on. And that's when I was 11 years old. She had it figured out then.
Well, you ran for 5,000 yards in college and the pros, and I'm glad you protected your head. It'll serve you well. Thanks again, Harlan. Talk to you later.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Harlan. Have a great day.
Good talking to you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk about some of our favorite people, our sponsors, like Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Management, 248-663-4748. Get a complimentary consultation from Luke. He'll answer your financial questions, create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. Hey, could it be retirement? Fast approaching, if you're 60 or thereabouts. Hard to do it alone? Get Luke to help you Set the tone for your family, for your future, for your wife, to make sure that you have enough in retirement. Hey, if you're younger, you know, life happens. You got to be prepared for all kinds of future obligations, kids, etc., weddings, college, you know it. So talk to Luke, get the complimentary consultation, create this plan, you'll reach your financial goals. It's Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Management, 248-663-4748. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Any products or services referenced here independent of Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. And my new Lincoln Nautilus, I love it. Now they came out with the Corsair. They got so many incredible SUVs. Come see Lincoln's incredible lineup at Hoop McInerney Star Lincoln from the 2020 Lincoln Aviator. Arrived just last month. Now the Corsair is here. The experts are all over Lincoln for really changing the whole SUV landscape. They are some of the best, if not the best, in each price class. Come see Star's gorgeous show, and we can even buy your new Lincoln out with the effortless ownership experience online. Go to starlincoln.com, order your model, feature, colors, and then just roll into Star and pick it up. Check out this incredible new lineup of SUVs, Hoop McInerney's Star Lincoln, Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. Tell them that No Filter sent you, and you'll get the best service you can imagine, even beyond the Star treatment that everyone else gets, which is part of what it's all about at Star Lincoln. You are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
All right, Eli, now you and I have not heard the term Corsair mentioned since we opened our 1960 pack of Topps baseball cards and picked out the card called Corsair Outfield Trio. What was that about and who was on that card?
I do not remember that. Corsair
really?
Outfield
Trio. Pittsburgh Pirates Outfield Trio. They had Bill Verdon on it. They had, obviously, Roberto Clemente. And who was the third? But, yeah, Corsair Outfield Trio.
Huh.
I just thought I'd mention
that. Verdon, they had
Clemente, and I'm drawing a blank.
Verdon was in center, Clemente in right. I can't think of the left fielder. I do remember Dick Grote, of course,
Dick
and Bill Mazeroski.
Yeah, I had a Dick Grote glove.
And was it Hoke? It was Don Hoke, the
Don
catcher?
Hoke. Don Hoke was the third baseman.
And it was the guy, the first baseman.
Dick Stewart.
Dick
Stewart. Dr. Strange glove.
Yeah. Anyway,
one of the great nicknames in sports history, Dr. Strangelove, because he was such a horrible fielder.
Right.
Was that all about, the Corsair thing?
I don't know. I don't know what Corsair is.
It's another term for pirate.
Okay.
And that's why they had those three guys on the baseball card. And who was the third? Well, anyway, we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. Listen.
So you're in Nashville with Pete Rose. How exciting.
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I was down in Nashville for a show, and Pete was there Saturday. There's one thing about Pete when he shows up for the show. The crowds are enormous. I don't know anybody in this country that doesn't have his autograph at least 5, 6, 7 times.
Isn't that about you?
I understand that, but I mean, Pete, every time he steps into a place, is signing 200, 300, 400 autographs. I mean, he is the real show. He's the real deal, and he signs the card shows like he used to play ball with intensity. Every time I see him start to sit down to start signing autographs, I think he's going to slide into second base.
You know, he's going to be on our show. That's great that you got him lined up. We're going to talk to him Thursday. Very excited. There's so much to talk about with Pete Rose. I got a quick little Pete Rose story. When I was just a long-haired FM reporter before I got into TV, nobody knew who I was really, and I'm at the DAC, the Detroit Athletic Club, with the Beavers, I think it was, these guys that go swimming, these old, you know, old
rich guys. I've been to that. I know that.
So
yeah.
Old rich guys. So after Pete speaks there, I hear he's going to be there. So I go with my little recorder. I'm a scruffy-haired FM sportscaster. And he's talking to all the guys in the blue blazers with the crest on it. And he sees me waiting. And he says, "Excuse me, fellas," like five or six guys. He comes over to me and asks if he can help me out, because I'm a reporter there, and gave me like 5 minutes of his time. I was very, very impressed that he even gave me the time of day.
Pretty gracious when it comes to that.
You know, we ain't got a lot of time left here on this show, unfortunately, but I'm not going to tell a similar
plenty of time.
Plenty
of time.
We do? Plenty of time.
Okay, we just got to think about our radio people a few minutes. You got all the time you want. Go ahead.
When they had that big I-75 series, the Reds and the Tigers, every spring to benefit, you know, amateur baseball,
right,
it was a thrill to see the great red machine, the big red machine in Detroit. I didn't know what to expect. I went over to Pete and asked him. I was a television reporter at Channel 7 for a minute for an interview. He said, "Sure." We get ready to roll the camera. He turns to me and says, "I'm sorry, what did you say your name was? Bob?" I said, "Yes, Bob." He called me Bob throughout that interview because he wanted my audience to think that I had a relationship with him. I've met the biggest stars in sports over the last 50 years, and he's one of the nicest men I was ever around.
He knows what he's doing.
And yet,
and one other thing about
Pete.
Yet,
there's so many nasty things you can say about Pete Rose.
A lot of things you can say.
Oh, jeez.
Let me say this to you. I think now, and we got a story later on about gambling, but I think now there has to be more consideration given for Pete for one reason. If gambling's about to become totally legal, what the hell did he do?
Can you imagine?
That's an interesting point. I've never heard anybody mention that before,
right,
Danny.
Baseball's embracing it like crazy. Now, players are still not allowed to gamble, but the scout.
They are. In the casinos.
Well, yes, they can. Yeah, they're just not allowed to bet on baseball.
There's sports books in there.
Right, right.
No one's going to stop them from gambling.
You know, if you're a gambler, you're a degenerate gambler, and maybe Pete was a degenerate gambler, I don't know.
He was.
You're going to bet on everything.
He was.
So if you're a Major League Baseball player and you're a gambler, you're not just going to stick to the casino.
No.
You're going to bet on something you know best, which is baseball. It makes perfect sense.
It does.
Hey, guys,
does
since you're talking about baseball, I got a scenario for you. I want you to consider this. Every time, the next time you watch a baseball playoff game this week, every time a ball player gets a key hit, hits a big home run, or a pitcher makes a great pitch to strike somebody out, everybody's looking nervously at the field for a flag. Tweet, penalty, we're going to bring that back and repeat the play. That's how ridiculous the NFL and college football have become. Anytime any big play happens, tweet, another penalty. Can you imagine that in baseball or any other sport? It's out of control.
There were 20 penalties in the Dallas Dallas Green Bay game yesterday.
Yeah.
Just a terribly officiated game, and even sweet little Jason Garrett, their coach, got a penalty for arguing with the
referee. Arguing with the referee.
I want to talk.
Okay, careful about that. Be careful about that. He was given an unsportsmanlike penalty for using abusive language towards an official.
We don't know
what he said.
Bob,
and Jerry Jones. Wait a minute, Denny. Jerry Jones said afterward,
"Yes,
quote, oh, I hope the little darling didn't hear something he hadn't heard before." Now that's BS because you don't know what that guy said. What Garrett said,
Bob. What could be so offensive that you want to throw a guy out? Unless everybody else can hear it. If everybody can hear it, that's a different story. But if a guy's got a conversation going on and a guy's bitching about something bad that he thinks is bad, you got to give him his time.
I agree.
You got to give him his minute.
The F word, it's just a word, okay?
It's all it is.
It's got 1,000 different meanings. It's not a big deal.
The F word is automatic ejection in baseball.
Well, it shouldn't be. Don't be so damn sensitive.
It's not automatic. Maybe in the leagues that you were in, but not where I was.
At the risk of sounding hypocritical, we don't use the words on this show, not because we don't otherwise, but let's not offend anybody if possible. You still can express yourself well. well without them, but let's not make them bigger than they really are. They're
just
words.
And let me add this too, Bob. If you threw out everybody who used the term MF either at or for somebody and they overheard it, we would never get through three innings.
And it's not a real word. Nobody does what it is. Okay. Nobody does that with their mother. It's just a term.
Right. Denny, you were one of the greatest pitchers of all time during your era. I know umpiring, and you don't. Baseball players don't. You go to umpire.
How can you say he doesn't know umpiring? He threw 10,000 pitches that got called. Anyway, is it time?
May I continue, please?
No, we have to say goodbye to our radio listeners. Radio listeners, you're going to miss Bob Page's next rave. But I got to say goodbye first before he's going
to
do that.
When you go to Major League Umpire Development School, as I did, you sit in that classroom with Major League umpires, you learn something fast. Bob. Two things. Anytime the MF word is used, or if you put the word you in front of anything, it's automatic ejection,
Bob,
Denny.
You went back there 50 years ago when you smoked your last joint.
Well,
things have changed.
70 years ago.
Bob, that's a part of a wish list.
Denny, thank you, radio folks. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, now we can continue. Would you like to, you know, what are the problems besides the penalties?
What the hell do I know about umpiring?
Nothing about umpiring.
Not a thing. Fair ball. Foul ball.
Do you even know an umpire? Come on now.
Hey, Danny, I got something for you.
All right.
What the heck? We're sitting there with Brandon McAfee, our producer. Yes. He's running the board. We work with him every show we do. Yes. What do we know about what Brandon does? Nothing.
Don't say that.
Why do I need to know what Brandon does?
I know what he does. I just don't know how to do it. I know exactly what he does. He turns microphones on. He cuts up audio.
Does a great job.
I know what he does.
Try it.
That's interesting you say that. Because let me tell you how things have changed. When I got into television in 1980, I wasn't allowed to touch a machine. My first weekend there, I heard George Kell say, "Stay tuned for news for Detroit." And I go, "Holy, I'm going to be on in half an hour. I haven't cut my editor says, "Get me the tape." Well, I didn't know that to get the tape, I had to go ask the engineer to walk into the room, and his index finger on the eject button was legitimate. My index finger on the eject button was a violation and a write up. And I did it. Yep. I ejected a tape, and so I wasn't allowed to get near the equipment. And now to be in this business, you have to know how to do everything. You have to know a shoot.
That's
like,
the
edit,
way it is.
Yeah.
And listen, one of our dear friends just got fired, Freddie Heumann.
Yeah.
Just a shame. I mean, I feel
so
bad.
I don't know
bad.
What happened.
We don't know yet.
We're supposed to talk to him today.
Who knows what happened. But Eli, you're bringing up an interesting point. And I know this was the same way when you went to New York as it was for me all the years that I worked in New York. We had our lights in the studio set up permanently because everybody knew where they went and where they should be shown. An engineer had to come in, a union engineer, and do what you would do if you walk into your living room at home. Just flip a switch and the light comes on. Anybody else touched that switch and their hand would be broken at Madison Square Garden Network. I guarantee it. Flip a light switch.
Detroit before I went there, the union made a concession that we could go into a room with a special tape machine and screen a tape. So if I did an interview with somebody, Sparky Anderson, whatever, I could come back and I could screen the tape, take some notes that I could go edit. In New York, if I wanted to screen a tape, an engineer had to sit there with me and he's getting paid wages to watch me run a tape machine. It's crazy.
Yep.
Crazy.
And it's changed because
I'm a union guy, by the way.
One of the guys I had as a lighting technician, he was overweight. He was an alcoholic, 60 something. He would turn on the light switch, grab a chair at the back of the studio. I'm on the air live. And this guy falls asleep from the noon boozing and he's snoring while I'm live on the air. Now he probably wouldn't be the first person to snore while I was on the air live.
Ever tell you about, we're off the beaten path here. My first day on in New York, okay? I'm really scared. This is March 1986. I've gone there for the big contract. And the two anchor men, Roger Grimsby, making $1 million a year at the time.
Legendary.
And Bill Butel. These are two crusty
old
guys.
Bill Butel.
Well, Roger Grimsby was in the middle of a contract dispute, and he wasn't a very friendly guy at the time. And so he introduces me, not welcome to New York, not glad to have you, not here. He just throws it to me. And as soon as he throws it to me, he gets out of his chair, walks around to the side of the set, and smokes a cigarette. So I'm doing my sports cast, and here the guy, and my first one, I'm nervous as hell. And so I'm on my last story. I got 15 seconds to go. And he's not back in his seat. And so I'm finishing. He snuffs the cigarette out, goes back, sits down, straightens his tie out and says, thank you. See you at 11. And that was the end of it. And I go, I get home. My wife says, who were those two dinosaurs on the air with you? I go, honey, they make $1 million a year. They've been in New York forever and they're stars. She goes, well, they're terrible. I go, you're right. But they're stars. That's and so right. At the time, I said, when people come through Detroit and saw Sonny Elliott in the old days, with the, who's this lunatic? Yep, hey, he's right. Our guy. He's great.
That's right.
Anyway, how did I get off on that? So,
you and Bob are talking about New York again. We're going to get all kinds of text messages now about you guys talking about New York.
That's right.
All I ever did was play ball and win there.
How about the
Riddler? We can do the mailbag if you want.
Let's do it.
Into it. Well, but we haven't mentioned yet the amazing Anthony Mantha. As we record this, the Wings are 2-0. He got 4 goals, as everybody knows, Sunday night.
And
he got a great goal and an assist Saturday night at Nashville.
Listen up.
Larkin delayed. Hiroshi Mantha scores!
There you go.
Red Wings starting to find their game. Mantha drives the goal. Oh, score!
What a beauty.
What a goal! Here's Larkin looking to untie it. Rebound. Scores! Hat trick! Anthony Mantha! Hronek across Mantha. Scores! 4 goals!
Yes, and his 4th goal last night was with 1.6 seconds left. And of course, the long video review. So another 10. This is the problem with video. By the way, I don't want to get off on that video review. But man, they're off to a great start. They beat teams that had more points than them last year. They play Anaheim tomorrow night, a team they can beat. Tuesday night. That's tomorrow night, right? And we're going to get out of the game. I haven't been to a hockey game in the locker room, at least, for a long time.
We should all go maybe one time, huh? And listen, I'm going to get to this because I've been waiting all show. The NBA is now getting into gambling game. You guys may know about it. Here it is. The league announced a partnership with a company called William Hill on Wednesday.
British company.
Formerly making the sports book the authorized sports betting operator of the NBA in the United States. One thing to add, the NHL is now a client of theirs, too. The partnership with William Hill and gives them the right to use the official NBA betting data on all of their platforms, mm-hmm. and the NBA will advertise the gambling company on theirs and their networks combined. The league explained all of this in a big press conference the other day. And this William Hill, listen to this. They've got 112 sports books in Nevada.
Listen, in the future.
You hear me?
Yeah, in Nevada.
That's how big sports book is.
In the
112
in the future,
in Nevada.
Every arena you go to,
yes.
whether it's Little Caesars, Comerica Park, you're going to be able to bet on the game. Gambling will be everywhere.
The first one is going to be in Washington, D.C., because they're not a state. That's the reason why they're going there first.
I thought this one's going to be in Nashville, where the Predators is going to be in the Nashville arena.
No, this had nothing to do with the Predators.
Okay, but there's going to be one.
There's going to be one everywhere.
There's going to be one in Nashville, too.
There's going to be one everywhere. And this corporation that these guys have hooked up with, the Monumental Sports and Entertainment of the NBA, that's the team that owns the Wizards and the Caps. Mm-hmm. So these guys realize the kinds of dollars that are going to come out of this gambling thing. Everybody is going to enjoy
a piece of it. Yeah.
A piece of the action. Then it's going to just settle down to the college levels. Everybody's going to be fat and happy. You're going to eat Polish sausage for the rest of your life.
You can gamble.
And I will see about that. So I would just say this in rejoinder to the two of you who seem so excited, and I'll phrase it in the rhetorical manner, Mr. Rogers would. Can you say 1919 World Series?
Yes, yes.
Bob, that's always a thought in everybody's head. It's always. It's been in the back of my head ever since they started announcing this. How can you stop a team from doing what the 1919 White Sox did? Or is it just going to be one person or two people? You know what's going to happen.
I think the difference is that the 1919 White Sox.
They made no money.
Black Sox. Well, White Sox, they're called. But under Charles Comiskey, who was one of the most ruthless owners.
And gamblers.
These guys were making no money at all. They needed it. Now, I can't see Justin Verlander at $35 million a year needing to put $1,000 down in a game.
That's
ain't going to happen.
Yeah, it wipes a lot of it off the board.
But how about
a
guy who ain't making
salary.
That kind of money? And it's offered $35 million to miss a catch in the World Series or to strike out deliberately.
I don't think
the numbers can get that far outrageous, but things can happen. Listen, things have always happened. Things will happen in the future. And if you don't think that it's going to happen,
I think we're all smoking
something funny again.
I think that's – excuse me?
Excuse me?
I think that's –
J- Just Eli, Danny. Just
I
Eli.
I think the biggest problem is not with sports, not with the athletes at all. It's the people. It's the people who have formerly had to go to Las Vegas to gamble that can now go anywhere they want and bet all. And pretty soon you're going to have the TV on.
Yes.
And in the corner of the TV or on a separate station is going to be all the bets that are coming up all game long. You'll be able to make 50 bets during a game. It's going to be a lot of
They're giving the point spreads on the NFL pregame shows now the over-under numbers.
Hey, Jimmy the Greek did that 30 years ago.
They've been doing that a long time. One other thing.
Yeah, I guess
there's right. consideration to sell licensing to people who are not a part of the NBA or the NHL. And if you want to take a look at that, it'll cost you 500 big ones, $500,000 to get a license, but they're not that far to formulate it and put it into a complicated manner that everybody would understand.
And I think like the NFL is selling all their analytics to the gambling.
Sure, of course. They have to. Absolutely. That's what the NBA NHL is doing.
Speaking of football, did you see a couple of things yesterday? By the way, Jay Gruden was fired this morning as Redskins coach. They're 0-5. Tom Brady with 348 yards and 3 touchdowns. The Patriots 5-0. By the way, first time they've been 5-0 since 2007. I was going to say 2007, but I guess. Eli,
get back to John Gruden. You blew past that too quickly.
No,
because it's the same situation there.
Jay Gruden.
It's the same situation there as it is in Detroit and has been for years. You have a bungling, incompetent little owner and little Danny Snyder, who hires the wrong people, has no clue how to win, and every 3 or 4 years they fire the latest Redskins head coach and begin the process all over again. As long as Snyder owns the Redskins, what a great franchise, they're not going to win.
Now, how do you say that's comparable to the Tigers?
I can't. To the Lions.
Oh, the Lions.
I can't imagine why I would make that.
By the way,
analogy.
His brother, John, took the Raiders to London and came back with a 97-yard drive at the end after a stupid Chicago penalty. Roughing the kicker was ridiculous. Stupid. Anyway, they win in London 3-2. This is John Gruden after the game.
Say this, man. I'm 56 years old. That's the most fun I've ever had tonight, man. I'm so proud of you. You have no idea. I mean, we've been through a roller coaster already, but what you proved today is one thing. You can beat anybody, anywhere, on any time zone. You got it. I want everybody to have a great bye week. You have a whole week off.
Gruden's amazing. He was great on Monday Night Football, and if he succeeds as a coach now, that he's an all-time NFL icon. What else? Deshaun Watson,
we
5 touchdowns.
Go to the mailbag, as I said.
Yeah,
I
let's get
there.
Okay. Okay.
So
you want to talk about the Packers and all that stuff?
Sure.
Lions,
let's
Packers,
go.
Packers. Go ahead.
No bet. If we had an award for letter of the month, which we do not have yet on this program, this would be our letter of the month, I'm sure, in October, and it comes from Kyle Odston, who says, "Hi guys, loving every episode. Just a quick note, Bob, you're great. No holds barred and spot on commentary. I've lived in the Jackson Lansing area my whole life, but somehow was completely unaware of you. Also, do you have a photographic memory like a sports savant? I appreciate your always kind words to Denny in regards to Denny's pitching talent and insight. Denny, always interesting to hear about the old days. Maybe some prison anecdotes would be fun, at least for the audience. Might I recommend cutting back on your term, it is what it is," which I don't think you use too much.
I don't think so either.
Okay. But Eli, enough with the pot. We get it. You love pot. Otherwise solid and good at keeping the crew in check. And that is hard for Eli to do, folks. Keep up the good work, blah, blah, blah. Now, this is what I love. P.S. Can I get a signed ball? No, not from you, Denny. A signed ball from Eli. A golf ball. Have we ever had such a request before in the history of this program, albeit the brief history?
No, I don't think we've asked for a sign. I've never asked for a signed golf ball in my life.
Great note. Thanks for the kind words. But the reason you're not familiar with me from Lansing, because I left WJM there in 1975. Were you even born?
Okay.
I'm almost always nice to Denny.
And any other praise for you? Let's see. Where are some other praiseworthy Bob things?
Yeah, Bob.
Well, here we go. Bob, you mentioned Gus Johnson as your protege. It said that someone who could be on the show. Yeah. No, I don't think so. Do we want to have Gus Johnson? And somebody else asked me whether we bring on, suggested Mark Champion or Jim Brandstetter. And listen, Mark Champion is one of my best friends, and Jim Brandy, great friends of mine in the business, but they have a filter. They work for a team.
Yes.
And so you really can't, I wouldn't want to embarrass them by having him come on and asking him tough questions. So love those guys, but I don't think we would have them on the show.
I don't love it when you cut me off, as you just brazenly did. So I wanted to explain that I'm almost always nice to Denny McClain because I grew up a huge Tiger fan and watched him pitch his entire career. Denny McClain is one of the greatest pitchers I ever saw. Now, Denny did hate me last show when I felt it my duty to inform him that his late great father-in-law, Lou Boudreau, did not invent the shift, nor for Ted Williams. It was invented in the 1920s for another great hitter named Cy Williams.
You're wrong.
Oh, jeez.
You're just wrong. That's all.
Okay, Denny, here's another note too.
It doesn't matter. So it was.
What's the next note, Bob?
What's the next note? Go ahead, Bob.
The next note.
Who's praising you now? Let's go.
I'm just reading what we get here, fellas. Okay. If somebody rips me, I read that too, and you know that.
Okay, go ahead.
This is to Denny. Joe Vavra, if you did not know, was the Twins hitting coach from 2005 to 2012. Also the third base coach in Minnesota for a short time. You guys criticize Vavra like, who the hell is this? So he's obviously another big, you know, guardy pal that he's bringing over from Minnesota.
Isn't that usually what they do? They bring their pals to the new organization.
But this guy is not incompetent. He's not an unknown.
You know, not incompetent. I mean, our guys hit a team 205 Vavra. Or 210, whatever the hell it is. Don't tell me I'm not saying he's incompetent. I'm saying that whatever he's done and whatever he's trying to do doesn't work. That's all. Yeah, I don't know if it's incompetence. I don't know if he knows how to hit. I know how to hit. I just can't do it.
And a player who's in a slump can talk to anybody in the coaching staff, not just the batting coach. Yeah. They're all there to help you.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you got, Eli? Got another
letter or
something?
Well, you know, this one kind of got me a little bit. He says, I'm very disappointed in your lack of guts in the Lance Parrish interview last week. He gave dirt on Campbell and the Phillies and others. It's quite a role, but why didn't you throw him a question about his steroid use? And he says, you guys are chicken. You guys have a filter! Blah, blah, blah. Still a listener, though. No vice, Scott. You know, I guess that's a legitimate question. That's a legitimate question.
Remiss.
But, you know, Lance was taking steroids before they were illegal, before anybody really knew what they were. He was actually a forerunner of weightlifting, and I assume he took steroids. I don't know, but at the time, that's just what bodybuilders did. Every heavyweight champion bodybuilder took steroids, and it went on for decades without really being an issue. So it wasn't until much later.
That was a Southern California cult led by Angels catcher Brian Downing. He was the first guy who really pounded iron, and he and Lance and a bunch of guys out there used to work out in the offseason. Remember, when Denny was coming up, they said, never, ever lift weights because you lose your flexibility when you lift weights.
Well,
and Lance and Downing and those guys put it to rest.
That's right. That's not,
and Sparky hated him lifting weights.
Yeah,
told him not
that's
to.
That's not entirely accurate, but it's relatively close. In other words, they wanted you to lift weights to some degree, but 1 and 2 pounds and keep your tone on your body during the wintertime. That was all. But to lift 300,000 pounds, they didn't want you to do that.
All right, guys, I think we're out of time. Anything else?
I got another letter right here. It's a good one. Jeffrey Schrote writes, I know Bob and Eli were in New York during the Tigers' 1987 AL stretch run. That's not true. I covered that team every day in Detroit and was with them in Minnesota. A friend of mine claims that Bill Madlock was benched the rest of the season by Sparky. Remember this? When he took out Tony Fernandez in that late September game, Jays thought it was a dirty play. Ever hear about that? I never heard that Sparky disciplined him at all over that. Did you? They called him Mad Dog because he had a big temper.
No, I don't think that would. Sparky wouldn't do that.
No,
he's going to influence the performance of the team by benching a guy because he made it. No, no,
not a chance.
In fact, you're supposed to take guys out. I don't remember the play exactly. I was in New York at the time.
All right. But can I say one other thing before we close? We've been remiss about this as well. There is a kid named Isaiah Todd. I don't like to talk about recruiting. He's a 6'10 high school center from Raleigh, North Carolina, 5-star, 10 best player in the nation, according to Rivals.com. Now, his birthday is October 17th. He's going to announce it that day where he's going to go. It's down to two universities, Michigan and Kansas. We have not mentioned the problems that Bill Self has gotten his butt into at Kansas through alleged cheating. So I guarantee you that this kid is going to go to Michigan and play for Juwan Howard because Kansas is going on probation. And it doesn't look good out there. I'll tell you that. Yeah. They had some big basketball rally with Snoop Dogg or something, and he embarrassed them too. Right. Not a good situation out there in Lawrence.
Well, he may go to Michigan unless Duke and North Carolina come calling.
No. He's down to two.
Yeah. Well, that's what he said. But wait for North Carolina to bring the jet, and wait for Duke to bring the limos.
And don't be so sure about probation. What happened to North Carolina for all the cheating, for all the grade fixing?
Not much.
Did Roy Williams get in trouble for that? No.
Well, he certainly did. What are you talking about? They took away scholarships. They didn't suspend him from the NCAA tournament. But I don't know what was worse, what Williams did with cheating regarding grades, which he was at Carolina, or what Bill Self did at Kansas. I don't know what's going on at
if
Kansas.
If the coach cheated on the grades, if the coach had anything to do with that, he should have been thrown out of the NCAA forever.
They have insulation by the
– Of course they do.
From their assistants and the department heads and all that.
I agree with you.
All right. Hey, Pete Rose on Thursday. You're going to want to hear that. We're excited to have him, and we will see you all again, and have a great week.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.